Story of my life. When's the last time you heard someone say that outside of this series? Maybe it was when they lost their car keys, only to find them in the freezer. Or maybe it was when they opened the car door right into someone else's car door, again. Or maybe it was when the kids called from school to say they forgot their project. Maybe you've even said something like this today. Running late to church again, story of my life. It's what we say when something bad happens. It's what we say when we're frustrated. Because when we use that phrase, it almost always references something negative. And yet for every single one of us, we want the story of our lives to be a good thing. And for the last few weeks, we've been talking about the idea that each of our lives tells a story. And how maybe more than anything else, we all want the story of our lives to be a good one. And in this series, we've discovered that living a better story is what Jesus wants for us too. We've discovered that his desire isn't to make our lives miserable or boring or less, but to make them more rich, more satisfying, and more full than we can even imagine. So, living this full, better life story should be a piece of cake at this point, right? I mean, God's on our side. We have 5 weeks worth of ideas on exactly how we can change our lives. It should be easy to move toward the full life that Jesus promised. That would be nice. But if we're honest, we know change is difficult and can take longer than we'd like. And despite our best efforts, there are behaviors that continue to hurt us, that hurt the people around us, and that stand in the way of our living a better story. And this isn't just a Christian issue. You don't have to come to church or be a Jesus follower to know that some of the choices you make are harmful. We already know which choices are harmful. We know because we felt the consequences of those choices. Maybe you've seen the look on someone's face when they found out you gossiped about them. Or maybe you felt the shame that comes as a side effect of addiction to alcohol or drugs or shopping or pornography. Or maybe you've seen the hurt that your spouse or kids experienced when you did the same thing you promised not to do again. Or maybe you make yourself miserable, worrying if anyone will find out what's really going on in your life. No matter the situation, we're all old enough to have figured out that there are some actions, some choices, and even some thought patterns that have the potential to do some real damage to us and to our relationships. But here's what's crazy. Even though we realize the outcomes won't be good, we do these things anyway. I still sin. You still sin. We all still sin, even when we know better, and even when we don't want to. And if that wasn't demoralizing enough, a quick glance at social media can make you feel like everyone else is able to shake these sins. I mean, there's nothing like 15 minutes on Facebook to remind you that someone you know just lost a ton of weight, or posted a photo of their perfect marriage, or shared a story about their fantastic parenting, or mentioned how blessed they are by their new job opportunity. And maybe if we allowed ourselves to be really honest, we'd admit that we especially feel this way here at church. Right here, maybe more than anywhere else, we're tempted to feel like everyone else has it together. We look around and everyone else's family looks like a perfect picture. Everyone else has a good marriage. Everyone else has their temptations under control. Everyone else seems to have a better story, and even if logically we know better, it can be tempting to feel like we're the only sinners in the crowd, or at least the only ones who still sin this much. We can't help but wonder, is it this way for everyone? Or am I the only one who struggles? Is something wrong with me because I can't get a handle on this? And when we feel like failures, we all have the same tendency to take a step back, to keep our distance. Maybe it's because we think God is angry. We imagine what he would say to us, or worse, do to us, if we got too close. Or maybe we believe he's disappointed, that if we got too close to him, he'd remind us to try harder. Maybe we believe that this whole better story that Jesus promised just isn't as real or as true as we once thought. Or maybe it's not for us. Because when it comes to our sin, you and I have a tendency to respond by putting distance between us and God, to separate ourselves from his people, to tell ourselves that maybe it would be best if we just skipped this week at church, or canceled that meetup with our Christian friend, or checked out of small group, or opted out of that invitation to serve, or took a night off from praying. In small and subtle ways, we begin to think of ourselves as disqualified or underqualified to even be close to God. In other words, our messing up leads to our giving up. But the truth is, God doesn't want us taking a step back from Him, even when we mess up big time. So what are we supposed to do when we've blown it again and feel disqualified? Well, believe it or not, the Apostle Paul, one of the most famous Christians of all time, experienced this very same thing. And not just before he started to follow Jesus, but after. I'm talking about the Paul who wrote 13 of the 27 books in the New Testament. The Paul who started as a Pharisee with a strong religious background. That Paul. Check out what he said here in his letter to the church in Rome. I want to do what is right, but I can't. I want to do what is good, but I don't. I don't want to do what is wrong, but I do it anyway. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read these words, I feel a huge sense of relief. Because if Paul couldn't get it all together, then we're in good company. It turns out Paul was like you and me. He wanted to do good, but still found himself doing the exact opposite of what he intended. Paul is as good an example as any, but he wasn't the only one. See, broken people fill the pages of Scripture. The very first humans, Adam and Eve, sinned deeply enough to stain us all. Adam and Eve had two sons, one of whom killed the other. Moses was a murderer. Jacob had a family so dysfunctional that reality TV would have given him his own show. David was a great king and man after God's own heart, except he had an affair with a married woman. And when he found out she was pregnant with his child, had her husband killed. Mary and Joseph, trusted with caring for the Son of God, lost Jesus when he was a teenager and didn't find him for 3 days. Strangely, reading the Bible will make you feel better about your life, am I right? Turns out God has been in the business of using misfits for a long time. So if that's true, that all hope isn't lost on me or you, and that God still uses broken people, how did Paul keep following Jesus even when he felt like he couldn't get it right? Paul actually asked that very question. Just a few verses from his earlier statement, Paul said this, "Who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death?" And then he gave his answer. Thank God, the answer is in Jesus Christ, our Lord. When Paul felt helpless against his own sin, he reminded himself of what is true. And the truth for him and for us is this, our ability to follow God well isn't what determines whether or not we're right with God, or if He's happy with us, or if we're failures at the whole Christianity thing. Jesus died and rose to life to take our sin-stained life and give us His perfect life, because God knew that we'd never be able to live rightly on our own. In other words, we aren't perfect people. God knew we'd never be, but we are forgiven people. When we blow it, it's so important to remember, like Paul did, that we're forgiven. We're broken, but we're not disqualified. Remembering what Jesus did and who we are because of it will set us free when our best efforts at following Jesus fall short. Paul gave us another hint on how God views our failures and how He wants us to view them, too. In a different letter to a different church, Paul wrote this, "We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God, not from ourselves." In other words, Paul was saying that our fragile nature actually allows Jesus to get the credit for the good things in our lives. It's the cracks in our lives that show the good light of God pouring through. When we mess up, it's obvious that we're not the perfect ones. God is. Our mess ups are where God gets to show off His goodness. So the pressure to be perfect, it's off. And so the good news about faith is this. God doesn't use perfect pictures. He uses broken people. And God uses broken people because those are the only people He has. And God's story is a story of grace and redemption. God's story is the story of a God who loves you despite your failures, but also isn't content to leave you in them. And when you surrender your brokenness to God again and again, it gives the people near you a front row seat to see God's goodness at work. And that's a better story that will last a lifetime. So what's the failure that keeps you feeling like you need to step back from God and His people? Today, I want to invite you, maybe even challenge you, to change the way you think about that area. I'm not talking about simply trying harder or making a promise to do better, although those are good attitudes to have. I want you to change the way you think when you mess up. I want you to decide that you won't let giving in lead to giving up. Because Jesus isn't disqualifying you. He knew you'd never be perfect, and He doesn't expect you to be. He loves you anyway. Should you work on changing your behavior? Absolutely. Are you still going to mess up? Absolutely. That's why this is so important. Don't let sin or a hang-up cause you to push God away. Don't miss out on living a better story because you feel like you're not qualified to. When you give in to temptation, don't talk yourself into giving up on God's story for you. Instead, this week, decide to lay down the perfect picture of what you think it means to be a Christian and invite God into your real picture. Even when that picture includes sins you can't seem to quit. Even when that picture includes actions you're not proud of. Even when that picture looks as far as possible from what you think it should. Invite God into it anyway. He can handle it. He loves you more than you know. But here's the big thing. When you invite Jesus into your real picture, there's a good chance your picture isn't going to stay the same. There's a good chance He's going to challenge you to do some things differently, to think differently, to live differently. And that's okay. You can trust Him. He is an expert at repairing and fixing our brokenness. In fact, the ancients had a word for how God grew people. They called it sanctification. Sanctification is the process of being made holy, and it's a lifelong journey. Fortunately for all of us, God doesn't use perfect pictures. He uses broken people. And that makes for an incredible story that everyone is invited into. So today, decide you're not going to quit and give up your role in God's incredible story. As we finish this series, I want you to know that there's more at stake here than just your life and your story. When you let messing up lead to giving up, it can have a tremendous effect on those around you. At the same time, when you surrender your brokenness to God again and again, when you trust Him to change you, you give your spouse, your children, your coworkers, and your neighbors a living picture of what a better story looks like. When you continue to return to God despite your failures, it may just give them the courage to do the same thing. And when you trust Jesus to change the story of your life, you just might find Him using you to change the lives of those around you. And that's what living a better story is all about.